Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna, the Introduction, text number 57. Kiritamantam Pratamajam Kaṃsayana kādūṁ dūbhi Arpayam asa krichena Sonritad ati vivalaha Kirtimantam. By the name Kirtiman, Pratamam Pratamajam, the firstborn baby, Kaṃsaya, Anta Kaṃsa, Anaka Dundubi, Vasudev, or actually Vasudev. Arpayam asa delivered krichena with great pain saha hi vasudeva anritat from the breaking of the promise or from fear of being a liar Ati Vivala was very much disturbed, being afraid. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Vasudev was very much disturbed by the fear of becoming a liar by breaking his promise. Thus, with great pain, he delivered the firstborn son named Kirtiman, into the hands of Kaṃsa. Purport, in the Vedic system, as soon as a child is born, especially a male child, the father calls the learned brahmanas, and according to the description of the child's horoscope, the child is immediately given a name. This ceremony is called Namakarana. There are 10 different samskaras or reformatory methods adopted in the system of Varnashram Dharma. And the name-giving ceremony is one of them. Although Vasudeva's first son was to be delivered into the hands of Kaṃsa, the Namakarana ceremony was performed. And thus the child was named Kirtiman. Such names are given immediately after birth. So the samskaras, they're at the beginning of transformations in one's life, junctures in one life, birth being one of those junctures, marriage being another, is also one where you write your first letter in Sanskrit. There's one when you leave your body. These are all junctures. And the idea is that generally during junctures, transformation times, we want to set the proper atmosphere to most successfully begin that other part of our lives. So the atmosphere is trying to be created so that auspiciousness will be created so that one will be able to properly perform that part of one's life. Generally speaking, people don't know that there's actually differences in different phases of one's life. When they're 5 years old, they're trying to act like they're 50. And when they're 50 or 70, they're trying to act like they're 5. Because, generally speaking, they have no conception of what the purpose of life is. At 5, they're eating a lollipop, and at 90, they're eating a lollipop. 'Cause They don't know there's a time to eat lollipops, and there's not a time that you're not supposed to eat lollipops. So that's called culture. People try to act as if their body's not changing. They want to deny that actually their body is growing older, it becomes disease, and what to speak of the fact they may even have to leave their body at some time. It's, modern society is simply in denial, claiming that in the future, not now, but in the future, they'll be able to create something so that you'll always look like you're 20 years old, even after you leave your body. You'll still look like you're 20. Matter of fact, people are very concerned about what they're going to look like after they die. They want to make sure they have the proper hairstyle and they look healthy, at least when they're put into the casket. People can walk by and look at them and say, "Oh, look at John. He looks a lot healthy now that he's dead." And indeed, there's, to be buried nowadays in some parts of the world is quite expensive, because people who prepare the body have to make it look like it's very attractive. Otherwise, people are very disappointed. "My God, look at John. He actually looks dead." How embarrassing. He always said I wouldn't be caught dead. But now he is. He's dead. So this is all illusion. And people are trying to cultivate illusion from the beginning to the end of their lives. And even at the end of their lives, they're still trying to maintain the same illusion. But the samskaras are to actually give us some atmosphere of acceptance that there is some transformation. The baby is taking birth, and now he should be named something which is suitable for his future existence in this body. Not that we name him after the grandfather or the grandmother, we name her after the grandmother. That has nothing to do with their personality. Just complete 100% sentiment. We name him after our dead dog, because we love our dog. We loved our dog. We want to be reminded of our dog when we call our son. "Hey, Fifi, come." So there's nothing about reality in modern society, practically speaking. It's just all, because they have no idea, in the Tevidu, Swartikatim, Hivishnu, the Rashi, Bahir, Artamanina, they have no idea that the goal of life is to obtain Vishnu. That there's actually progression in consciousness, and that growing older should actually be conducive towards higher consciousness. Not that the older I grow, the more I lament. "Oh, why is my body changing? I wish it never changed." Spend first 20 years trying to enjoy the body, the next 50 years or 70 years lamenting of the fact that I can't enjoy it as much as I used to. Instead of developing one's higher consciousness, one is simply trying to live out the different phases of the material existence in denial that my body is actually changing, my circumstances are changing, and therefore I should change my activities and my consciousness. Of course, in modern society, they have some allowance for it. When you get older at 65 or something like that, then they allow you to retire. Right now in France, they raise the retirement age from 63 to 65, and millions of people are on the streets protesting. How can you dare do that? We want to retire at 63 so we can go and play checkers for the rest of our life. Do something productive. Play shuffleboard and checkers. And die, come back as a shuffle or whatever we're going to come back as. Therefore, without these samskaras, for most people, their lives is simply meaningless. They have no understanding that actually that there's a higher purpose of life, and the different stages of life are actually meant to help us attain that higher purpose of life. So vanashram dharma, vanashram the occupations, and the spiritual progress is all meant to be conducive towards that development. And the samskaras are also part of that. Whoever, there are different samskaras for different orders of life. For instance, for the kshatriyas and the vaishyas and the shudras, there's no sannyas, there's only vanaprastha. For at least for the kshatriyas, there's vanaprastha, and for the shudras, there's only marriage ceremony. Because they would not be able to take advantage of the other samskaras, because they're not really prepared, and the shudras, generally speaking, are not prepared in the vanashram system to take another stage of life. They stay in that stage of life, and therefore there is some samskara for them at the time of death. As a matter of fact, these samskaras are taken very seriously in India still. For instance, if a person is a beggar, he has a hard time in India. There's so many beggars. But when he leaves his body, if people see him on the street, then they throw coins all over his body so that he'll actually be able to, they can buy the wood to have the last ceremony where they cremate the body to give this soul a better chance to take another better birth in his next lifetime. So they take the samskaras quite seriously, and they take it in terms of, because they know, let's help the soul, give him the best opportunity to get a higher state of consciousness, a higher existence in his next lifetime. So there's still some, that is called culture. That culture is that I eat my dead meat with my fork, my proper hand, and I have the knife on the proper side of the table, and I have my napkin to wipe the blood off my lips. So this is called culture. After I eat the dead, rotten fermented grapes, after I drink the rotten fermented grapes, and call that I'm a cultured person. I know all the etiquette. That etiquette is less than that of the animals, but real etiquette is which will actually help us come to a higher state of consciousness and eventually transcend material existence, come back to our original existence again. So that was there in the Veda culture, and it was followed, although Vasudeva realized he was going to bring his child into the hands of Kamsa, but still he understood the importance of such a, at least give the child some auspiciousness from the very beginning, although he may not stay here very long. So text number 58, what is painful for saintly persons who strictly adhere to the truth? How can there not be independence for pure devotees who know the Supreme Lord is the substance? What deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character? And what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who have fully surrendered at his lotus feet? Purport, since the eighth son of Devaki was to kill Kamsa, one might ask, what was the need for Vasudeva to deliver the firstborn child? The answer is that Vasudeva had promised Kamsa that he would deliver all the children born of Devaki. Kamsa, being an asura, did not believe that the eighth child would kill him. He took it for granted that he might be killed by any of the children of Devaki. Vasudeva, therefore, to save Devaki, promised to give Kamsa every child, whether male or female. From another point of view, Vasudeva and Devaki were very pleased when they understood that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, would come as their eighth child. Vasudeva, a pure devotee of the Lord, was eager to see Krishna appear as the child from the eighth pregnancy of Devaki. Therefore, he wanted to deliver all the children quickly so the eighth turn would come and Krishna would appear. He got one child every year to see that Krishna's turn to appear would come as soon as possible. So here it says, Kim Dushanam. In the previous verse, we find out Vasudeva was pain to hand over the child to Kamsa. He wasn't saying, hey, here, take it. He wasn't filled with joy. Yeah. Let me watch you kill it. No, he was quite pained to have to hand over the child. So obviously they're in mixed feelings. One is that he was pained because he had to keep his word. On the other side, he was fearful of not keeping his word. On the other side, he wanted Krishna to appear, so he was actually, in one sense, undisturbed, because he knew the more children he had up to the eighth, then the quicker Krishna would appear. And he was quite anxious for Krishna to appear. On the other hand, we'll find out later on that these children who were killed by Kamsa, it wasn't just some by chance that they, in their previous lives, they had committed an offense against Lord Brahma, because when Lord Brahma was running after his daughter in the form of who turned into a stag or a female deer, then the sons of Marichi looked at Lord Brahma with abhorrence, that how can the father of the universe run after his own daughter? And because of this offense against Lord Brahma, they had to take birth in the womb of the mother of Hiranyakashipu and be killed one after another. Actually, how was Hiranyakashipu's son's? Anyhow, they took birth in Hiranyakashipu. And then later on, of course, they took birth as in the womb of Devaki, after being in the womb of Hiranyakashipu. I guess it's quite a degraded birth, take birth in such a demon's family. But then they were killed one after another, and then they regained their original position, as we'll find out later on, because they were taken to the planet of Yamaraj, but Devaki wanted to see her sons for one more time. So Krishna and Balaram went to the planet of Yamaraj and asked Yamaraj to return the sons of Devaki. Krishna got the sons back, little babies, in the form of little babies, and Mother Devaki breastfed them. And because before Krishna had left for Mathura, Mother Devaki breastfed Krishna in the form of a little baby, and therefore her breast milk became completely transcendental. And when these children who had been killed by Kamsa returned to her and she breastfed them, they became transcendentally realized, grew up immediately, became transcendentally realized, and returned to the heavenly planets where they started as the sons of Marichi. Quite interesting pastimes. This cyclical. You get killed, you commit an offense, you get tortured and killed because of it, you become purified, and you go back to the original heavenly position. So nothing happens arbitrarily. Everything is a divine arrangement. And here, Vasudeva, we can understand, that even in the spiritual consciousness, there's some pain, but it's transcendental pain. It's not material pain. It's not suffering. It's some feeling of disappointment, but which is also transcendental, pleasurable. And at the same time, we find that Kamsa, because this is the end of Dwarpa Yuga, but people are still civilized. It wasn't expected for people to take a little baby and smash its head against the stone of a prison. Nowadays, of course, it's completely normal. Not completely normal, but somewhat normal among some people. But back then it was abominable to do such a thing. But Kamsa, in spite of the fact that it was, because even the demons are afraid of losing their reputation, but out of fear of his own life, he was able to do anything abominable, even kill a little helpless child. So therefore, what deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character? And as people become degraded due to their sinful activities, therefore we can expect their activities will also become more and more abominable. And what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who have fully surrendered at his lotus feet? So, for those who are Krishna conscious, they can do whatever is necessary to please Krishna and further his activities. And for those who are demons, they'll do anything that's necessary to further their demoniac activities. And the pure devotee can do whatever is necessary to please Krishna. And at the same time, although it's not very pleasant sometimes, still it's one understands the higher purpose and does whatever is necessary. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Purport is we should remember Krishna and do everything for him, and then we won't get into trouble. Otherwise, all we can expect is trouble. Yes?
Maharaj, so today's samskara for, you know, the Western people, it is Harinam samskara?
No, there's no samskara. Western people?
Like, or the Western devotees?
No, Harinam is not a samskara. Harinam is the yuga. Harinam is yagya, is a yagya for Kali Yuga, yagya by Vishnu. It's not an introduction to different phases of material existence. It's a sacrifice, spiritual sacrifice for Kali Yuga. Krite tadayato Vishnu, traitayam majiko, traitayam yajiko man. Tretyayam yajito mukai, dwarpayam parichariyam kalota dari kirtanam. So it's the sacrifice for Kali Yuga. Yes?
So you said, Maharaj, that if I understand correctly, Kshatriyas take manaprastha, Vaishyas take manaprastha, but Shudras do not take manaprastha?
Oh, I don't know, so sure about Vaishyas. Generally speaking, only the Brahmins take sannyas. The Kshatriyas take vanaprastha, up to vanaprastha, like the Pandavas took vanaprastha. And the Shudras definitely don't go beyond family life. But I don't know about the Vaishyas. But I don't really know, I don't really hear about Vaishyas taking vanaprastha. I guess they also stay in family life. Yes.
Yeah, well, because we are kind of emphasizing to the devotees, or with time we will try to establish the Vanaprastha system as well in ISKCON. So how much is this something that we should take in consideration if the devotees are ready or not ready? Because I found myself in the Shudra and Lecture mentality more than, so in this category it shouldn't be like this. I'm not qualified to even take a Vanaprastha.
No, of course, we have to do what's practical. Otherwise, it'll be a failure. We're not ready to take vanaprastha. The Prabhupada said you go to the holy place and you start another family there. Anything else? Kuala Grantarai Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.